Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, one of the many features of Reader Views. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm the managing editor of Reader Views, and I'm also the host for today. I'm really delighted to be speaking with Paul Hall, and we're going to be talking about his latest book. It's called Places the Dead Call Home. And it is just a recent winner of the Bronze West Mountain Best Regional Fiction in the 2007 Independent Publisher Book Awards. This is just a real honor to be able to get this award. Paul is also the author of award-winning Our Father and its sequel, The Big Island. He is a business writer, public relations counselor, and a writing instructor, and has published poems, stories, and articles in a variety of publications, which include the Paris Review, The Sun, Reader's Digest, and quite a few other trades. Paul lives in Troy, Michigan, but spends much of his time in the American Southwest, and that's actually where the setting for the Places the Dead Call Home is located, and also he spent some time in Rome, Italy. Well, welcome, Paul.
Well, thank you, Irene.
Gosh, a winner. Congratulations.
Well, thanks again. I'm really pleased about that. And, you know, it's a lot of hard work, so anytime you can get some recognition, it feels good.
Well, no kidding. But you've not only won for this particular book that we're going to be talking about, but you've also won other awards for other books.
Yes, I won the, I guess it's the... Writer's Digest Award in 2001 for Our Father.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, yes.
Wow, so you're a winner all the way around. That's
well,
sure.
I like to think so, but you know.
That's good. Let's just go into Places the Dead Call Home. That sounds like, you know, the title itself is very intriguing. And give us a gist of what this book is all about.
Well, it's about it's a story of actually two episodes that take place in two different parts of the country, and result unfortunately in the death of a couple of people. And those take place in the 50s, the first one, and then later in the 70s, the second episode. And as events transpire, people who were connected to those deaths get information that leads them to solve, I guess you'd call it the mystery of those unfortunate tragedies. And these people come together in a sort of strange way and go on a quest in the Four Corners area. And arrived together in the area called Mesa Verde, which, is a, as you probably know, is a national park in Colorado, southwest Colorado. And all of this comes together there, and they learn a few things about, well, they learn everything, as a matter of fact, about what happened to their respective relations who were murdered earlier on. And that's the basic storyline right there.
Okay, so you said that one part takes in the 50s and one part takes in the 70s. So are they interrelated?
Yes, there's one character in the book who's Josh Kincaid, probably the main character of the book. In the 1950s, his father gets shot at a convenience store in Oklahoma City, just off of Route 66. And he's with his pregnant girlfriend, who is also shot, but she survives and in a coma lives on until the main character, Josh, is born. And that's back in, so that'd be in the 50s. He, later on in the service, as a military policeman in the Army, is at an event at a Fort Belvoir, Virginia, where a Army officer dies falling from a balcony. And that is the second death, basically. And so he's connected to both of these occurrences, first of all, by virtue of his being the son of this one murdered person, and secondly, by being at the second event. So he is the link between the two activities.
Oh, okay. Is any of this set on real life?
Not exactly. I mean, as the book started out, as I envisioned it when I first started writing it, it was a much longer book. It went back, and the narrative actually started in the 50s. And it was based on people I knew, not I knew, but that my family had talked about for years. Especially the Robert, I think it's Robert Kincaid, the father, excuse me, I don't even know my own character. Jimmy Kincaid, the father of Josh, who's killed. He was based on a family member who I knew only by sort of people talking about him and legends, so to speak. He had been a soldier and had some, had died very, relatively young, not through the same kind of circumstances as are described in the book, but and had been sort of a family legend, so to speak. And so I kind of used that, but, I mean, the similarities don't extend beyond that. But I envisioned it, as I said, as a longer book, and to include the entire history of his activities, but I had to shorten that because it just got too long and too involved. So I basically what I did was I said why don't I use the technique of the diary, and so the young woman that he was engaged to, or his girlfriend, is writing a diary that appears occasionally throughout the book, and it's not only her diary, but it's also a sort of transcription of what she's heard the grandmother say, and this gets very involved, I know, but Josh's grandmother, as she's in a mental institution. So she's writing notes, and she's also writing her own diary, and these recur throughout the book and sort of give a sort of a past reference to the action.
Are these actually taken from real diaries, or
no.
Is this just something you need?
No, I just made them up. Yep.
Well, this is what's great about writing fiction, but yet, you know, I'm sure that there are people that can relate to something or another in fiction. So, and quite often fiction writers do, as you did, take a character from somebody that you have heard of or know. And
right.
Well,
absolutely. It is based on, sure. You know, based on the character of people I knew, yeah, or heard of.
Right. Any of your own life experiences in this book?
Yes, as a matter of fact, to some extent there are. I was in the military. I was stationed for a while in Virginia. So, and I have spent a good deal of time, as I said, in the Four Corners area. Traveled there and done extensive research. So those two things obviously are things that reflect my past experience, my personal experience.
Sure.
I did obviously do and have lived in Detroit here as well, so the character of Frankie McKnight, who's the cousin of the main character, is somebody that, you know, I can relate to based on knowing just characters in this part of the country and their interest in, you know, the way they live, the way their ethos, you know, the kind of people that they are. So, yeah, to that extent, that my experience is in the book, yes.
And you just mentioned characters, and you're coming up with a lot of characters, and from what I understand from our reviewer is that you have a lot of characters in your story, yet you're able to bring all these characters in, and there's no confusion as to who's who. I mean, that takes talent to be able to do that. And so it just, tell us how you can actually do that, bring in these characters and yet separate them so that they don't get meshed in with each other.
Well, that is a good question. It's a matter for me of, first of all, visualizing these people and then understanding their idiosyncrasies and what makes them different and what makes them behave in ways that other characters don't. And I actually see them as unique individuals, which helps, so that I'm not just kind of dicing up one character type into several different versions of that. So I actually create the personas, the three or four. In this case, the main characters, the main people in this are the four people driving up to Mesa Verde. And so, and those are Josh Kincaid, which I already mentioned, Frankie McKnight, his cousin, and then the other pair of customers, and customers of characters, are Jeffrey Bonas, who's the son of the killed soldier, And he hooks up with a woman named Jeanette Koskis, and she's kind of traveling and escaping at the same time across country incognito, trying to get away from a couple of situations that she's been in. And I just thought the idea of pairing these characters helped me to kind of make them stand out, because you have one kind of working off of the other, and you can see the differences in the characters that way.
That's being creative, that's for sure. So, and I understand you have only one female in the story?
Well, one major
one
female.
Major.
I mean, that's a good point, too, because other people have made that observation. But what's really, to me, what's really important is that the action is driven by the diary of this woman who's obviously not an active character. She's dead at the time of the action of the book. Both of them are. But they're very important in putting forth or generating the action behind what goes on, you know, because when Frankie McKnight finds the diary, that's what kind of ignites the whole plot. So they are important, although they're not present, so to speak. But yes, the main present character is Jeanette Koskis, and she is the only female, although there is another minor character who's a friend of Josh Kincaid, works with her at the bar that they both work at called the Bloody Sunday. Her name's Sheila. Sheila Novak, yeah.
Okay.
But she's not a major character, although she's important in a couple of places.
Sure. You spend a lot of time in the Four Corners, as you had mentioned, and obviously have done a lot of research. Your research goes into, or your book, and I guess obviously your research, into the Navajo Indians. How much research did you really have to do?
Well, quite a bit, actually. I got interested in that area of the country when I just started traveling out there. And then I had an interest in, not a professional interest, but an interest in archaeology. In fact, a couple of my other books deal with that to some extent. And I got interested in, from that standpoint, in the ruins out there and the Anasazi, you know, the Indians who, or the native peoples who are thought to have occupied much of that part of the country and disappeared in around 1300. So I got interested in that, and I did some research on those peoples and found that it fit into the scheme of this book, because it's people, you know, dead people who at one time called the Mesa Verde area home, you know, and now don't. And I got interested in the whole idea of the Native American cultures, the displacement, the sort of shabby treatment, obviously, that they endured and still endure. And I thought that was, while not a major theme of the book, certainly an underlying motif which generated much of the action. With, for example, the character Tommy Three Hands, who's a Navajo, or claims to be a Navajo, maybe any kind of Indian, yes. I think I got away from your question there.
No, that was great. So being that there is an underlying Indian or Navajo, claims to be Navajo.
Yes.
Do you have mysticism also involved in your book?
This what? I'm sorry?
Mysticism?
Yes, I do. To a certain extent, there is. I one of the characters especially, Jeanette Koskis, is very attuned to a sense of history, a sense of the continuity of place that she recognizes when she arrives at Mesa Verde. And there is a very strong sense for her that she can feel the presence of this past civilization. And that's important because, not to give away the total plot here, but it's important because the reason everybody's the impetus to get to this area is driven, again, as I said, by references in the diary and reports of this young woman. And one of them is a report of an Indian or Native American who worked at a hospital where this woman was hospitalized and may have had something to do with her death. And so that the cultural, you know, issues of being a Native American and being in your own country sort of displaced and sort of enduring bias and bigotry and all sorts of other indignities is part of the story.
Okay. So why Mesa Verde? Why the Four Corners? Why not Southern Arizona or other areas of New Mexico? Why that particular area?
Well, that's an excellent question, and what caught me about the area was the mystery of these displaced Native Americans, and I liked the fact that you can go to where you can actually stand in or around these places where they lived, and you have the continuity of hundreds of years of the existence of these people, but they're not there, and that struck me as interesting and also as basically representative of the lives of these folks. They're trying to reassemble or somehow put together a past that they don't understand and they can't justify with their current status in the world. And so they go to an area where not only can't they justify it, but historians have no idea in any definitive way what happened to the Anasazi. So I just saw the parallels there as being overwhelmingly interesting for me, and so I thought I'd use that setting.
I find that really interesting, and especially, you know, when you're saying that this tribe of people were there and all of a sudden they just disappeared and nobody knows why, and there's really no way to find out.
Not really. I mean, there is pretty good speculation that it could have been anything from hunger to
a plague, maybe.
Plague. Yeah. But there is also this mythology that they all of a sudden just disappeared. And if there's, and I refer to another book in this book, I refer to a book called The Haunted Mesa by Louis L'Amour, who I'm sure you know, the famous Western writer. And he wrote that book late in his career, and that book talks about, actually, there's a curtain or a veil through which we can pass, and you know, the Anasazi could do that. It's very, you know, very, it gets into some very mystical kinds of areas. And I was playing on that a little bit, obviously. The mystery of that culture just not being accounted for in terms of their disappearance.
Do you think that myth is maybe not a myth, personally?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that there are probably more rational explanations, but it's a nice myth. It's a myth that I found that worked with the what was going on in my book, so I kind of played on it.
Yeah, I can see that you would. Mm-hmm. So, that area certainly is a great area, and it does have a lot of mysticism, and it does have that just sort of mystic, I guess, feel
yes.
to it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really does. I mean, if you travel to the area, and I think you can stand in there, and you can actually, well, I can anyway, maybe it's just me, but I can actually sense, again, the continuity of the past. There's not a lot of civilization to obliterate that, and there's not structures or a city, urban kind of overlay that hides it. It's all right there, just like it was 700 years ago. So I find that I don't know if that's mystical or not, but I find that it's comforting in some ways that you can actually that there is a continuity with the past. You know, often in an urban setting, the building is torn down to put the next one up, you know, and so there's not really, in the United States anyway, there's not really that sense of continuity in some ways.
And I just hope that this is preserved. You know, some of these other areas that supposedly have vortexes have just been
yeah.
so
overrun
with tourists, and it just it loses it. It just loses all that past and all that core.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's one of the concerns that that Josh Kincaid has in the book. You know, he tells his cousin Frankie, you know, this is not some out of the way place. This is actually a tourist destination, and there is a concern that that kind of thing. You know, if you go to Sedona, for example,
exactly,
Sedona has grown into, you know, almost a new age counterculture kind of place, which is a little disheartening because that's another area that's very beautiful, very scenic, very mystical, as you say, in a way. And you know, it gets so commercial after a while and overrun that you start losing that. So, yeah, I'd be sad to see that happen in Mesa Verde. And I think there's an effort because it is a national park and because there's a sort of reverence for maintaining the way it was, that we can hope that it'll stay that way.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of Sedona when you know when I was talking, because I've been to Sedona and I was so excited to go there because there's just so much hype over it. And
yeah,
I went there and it's like, oh, we can't even park this vehicle anywhere.
That's exactly right. The first time I was in Sedona, it was probably 20 years ago, and it was at least reasonably free of that kind of clutter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's changed. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. So you obviously have some personal interest in this history, and how much of that actually influences your own personal life?
Well, I mean, I'm interested in it as I said, I'm not a professional, obviously, in this area, but I'm interested in it from just a level of being an American and understanding that we aren't the first people who inhabited this country,
mm-hmm.
And you know, we have a long history and a long culture that needs to be appreciated. That has nothing to do with you know, the landing of the Pilgrims, starting with that. So I don't know. It's interesting to me because my father always talked about having, and this has never been verified, but he always talked about being part Indian. I have friends here who are Indians. And I'm not happy, as I'm sure most people aren't, with the way they've been treated. I just noticed that there's going to be this show, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, coming on TV tonight, which is based on the book by Dee Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's just interesting that we're rethinking this whole thing, but, you know, I guess I'm interested in it because it gives me a wider appreciation of the entire history and culture of this country than we just get in the, you know, textbooks in school, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have an underlying message of some sort in this book that it pertains to what you had just said?
Well, I guess I do. I mean, the message is probably, I don't know if it's a message, but I have an idea that there's an effort. We always want to know what happened. We always want to know what shaped us, what as a culture and as individuals. And if we have holes in that history or gaps, we like to find out. I think it's just a natural thing for people to try to do. Unfortunately, I think sometimes when we can't discover whatever caused the gap or can't fill them in with real information, we kind of create information, and that's where we get, you know, we get stories that are not accurate, or we get representations of people and culture, even in our own lives or in the life of the country, which is inaccurate. So, I mean, I guess this is a book about yearning for the truth, not filling in with your own, and you know, Josh finds out things, and so does Jeffrey Bonus find out things about their respective losses that helps them, I think, helps them move forward in their life, but also helps them understand that, you know, whatever happens, you accept, you don't manufacture something to to just to have something fill in the gap kind of thing.
Great message. Yearning for the truth and then
yeah.
going with that. You know, that isn't that what we're doing? We're all doing. We're yearning for some type of truth.
I think we are, and I think the problem, as I say, is sometimes we find the wrong answers because we just, in our effort, in our, you know, hopes to learn the truth. If we can't find out, we just make something up, and I think that's the real danger.
Mm-hmm. Well, gosh, Paul, this has been a real pleasure talking to you, and I've just looked at my clock, and it's, oh my goodness, we've run out of time. This sounds like a fantastic book. Our reviewer thoroughly enjoyed it. And please tell our listening audience what your website address is so that they can go and just check out more about you and your book.
Well, I'd be happy to. Thanks. The website is called placesthedeadcallhome.com. It's the title of the book. And you can learn about this book and other ones that I've read. And I try to keep it updated. We'll see.
Right. Okay, Paul, thank you again for the time that you've spent with us and giving us such an insight in your book. And, you know, even on your own life and your beliefs, and just really thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, and I'm happy to do it.
Great. And I'd like to remind our listening audience that you can link to Paul Hall's author's page on Inside Scoop Live or the book review and read reviews to purchase Places, The Dead Call Home, through Amazon, or of course, as Paul had mentioned, you can go to his website, and it's the name of the book, placesthedeadcallhome.com, and order your book there too. I'm your host, Irene Watson, and thank you for listening and supporting Paul, and I invite you to check out our other interviews and listen in. Bye for now.